Money FM 89.3, best of the breakfast huddle. The Bigger Picture with Ryan Hwang.
And there's so much happening today.
How much do you know about value investing? I have to admit, although it's a pretty straightforward concept, I think it's slowly evolving.
Yeah, I mean, this is basically when you look at the fundamentals, okay. You're picking up a stock which is relatively cheap.
Yeah, I can sum it up in four words. Buy low and sell high.
Yeah, right. Actually, from day one, this is the first advice that Ryan gave to me the moment I walked through the doors of Money FM. Oh, don't worry, you can do this show. Just remember, buy low, sell high. I'm like, what?
Do we need to run our disclaimer right now?
It will come up later.
All right, value investing sounds simple, right? And yeah, it actually has outperformed if you followed that concept for around 85 years. But it has not really been performing as it should in the past 10 years. So this is because you've got a lot of companies now using technology and software to grow. And this puts a big question mark over how do you value these technology assets, which are not physical anymore. How do you put a number on it? Is the old definition of value still valid? So to answer that question, we've got some help from Stephen Whiting. He is the Chief Investment Strategist and Chief Economist at Citi Private Bank. Morning, Stephen. How are you doing?
Hi, good morning to you.
Hey, Stephen, glad to have you on the line. And you are an expert when it comes to this, right? When we talk about value investing, it's pretty much investing in stocks with a low market price relative to accounting book value. It's worked for a long time until the past 10 years. What's gone wrong? How has it evolved?
Well, I would say that there are a couple factors at play here. One of them is fairly straightforward, and that is just how particular assets are accounted for. When you can create a good deal of value without tangible product, when you think about the app economy, for example, and maybe purchasing some applications with some balance sheet goodwill, for example, and if you find that that is particularly useful at producing profits, well, then you may underaccount for it in book value. Mm-hmm. But what we can see, for example, then, is that the price-to-earnings ratio for some of these companies will not be as high as a book valuation measure might imply. So I think it's important, again, to see that there are ways in which we might distort and undervalue certain things that can generate a good deal of growth. And certainly growth has value. But now when you think about the other issue, and that is that value stocks have moved up so poorly, in fact, relative to growth stocks, that the growth is so tremendously outperformed. There's another element to it. This is this long-term trend of lower interest rates. And when you have low interest rates, what you are doing with them in a financial sense is you're discounting future values, a higher capitalization for the future. So a firm that may have no profits at all, that may have some profits just potentially way out in the distant future, can have a very, very high value. But interest rates can only fall so far. Mm-hmm. And we know that now zero may not be the downside limit, but we've had a lot of decline in interest rates. It's hard to even remember, for example, that U.S. Treasury yields were close to 2% at the start of the year. Here they are closer to 0.5%. If you look at long-term U.S. government bond, 10-year notes. So there's been a tremendous, tremendous tailwind behind growth as a factor in investing. And some of these things may be lasting, like I mentioned about where book value may be and what that may be a bit distortion. But other certain factors behind this, you know, are really, really driven by COVID and these emergency stimulus measures, which won't be with us forever.
Yeah, Stephen, bring up a few good points. There's almost a new normal when it comes to markets, and sometimes even tech companies are seen as defensive stocks right now. And so when you look at how structurally there is this change right now, a rising dependence on the technology, at least some association to it, some people are putting or having trouble struggling to put a value on things. And this has led to some inflated valuations. Some names come to mind like Tesla, Amazon. Stephen, walk us through some of the companies that you're tracking that can help paint what you're talking about.
Well, let's just give an example from one of the things you said, and that is e-commerce. Now, e-commerce has grown faster than traditional retail for 15 years now or longer. And it makes perfect sense. Traditional retail is sort of like filling a warehouse, you can call it, now we can relate to that, with a bunch of things and just hoping that someone would walk in off the street and buy whatever you speculated they would want in your inventory. And so clearly what's happened with e-commerce, the ability to know what your client demands and offer them a much wider variety of things to purchase, is economically superior. But during this COVID collapse around the world, when so much of the world was forced into social distancing and real forced close downs, e-commerce data that we track suddenly jumped another 50% in a quarter in terms of its relative share of consumer purchases. And so when you think about it, if you, one of the fastest way in the world to get a record drop in retail sales is force the stores to close down. Now, it looks like some of these e-commerce companies, which in the long run are going to succeed, they got a lot of their success very, very fast. And so COVID, for example, and this need for us to use technology to adapt to this global epidemic, it's really fantastic. It's probably saved lives. It's prevented the transmission of the virus for individuals to not be in shopping centers together. But when you think about all of this, a lot of this is not long-term growth. It's just this one-off adaptation that we have right now. It's been very great for the for humankind that we've had it, but it isn't long-term growth, and we may overestimate it because of that.
Stephen Whiting, Chief Investment Strategist and Chief Economist at City Private Bank. Stephen, looking at how things have changed, we talked about redefining value. We used to look at the balance sheet to figure out how things are cheap. What is or should be the new way to look at things?
Well, look, I think a good thing to begin with is growth at a reasonable price. That there is a range of different assets, some very slow growing, that relative to that low growth rate may be cheap. There may be very rapidly growing companies, but only when there's still the potential in their market capitalization for them to get even larger do they have value. Are they reasonably priced growth? If you think about some companies and you say, well, their market capitalization suddenly $2 trillion very, very fast, then implies a tremendous amount of success already in the future. And they may get that. They may end up being the companies that we rely on and own a great share of the economy and a lot of employees. But if you've already priced that into their total market capitalization now, they no longer become a really compelling investment value.
And Stephen, how about things like the ability to pay dividends and the exposure to various markets? If you look at what's out there right now, where is the value? Where should you be looking? And when you look at how some of the names, the typical conventional traditional industries have been battered so much, is there value in those industries?
Oh, absolutely. Because a good deal of this is really a function of this COVID collapse. So we've divided half of the world's equities, literally leaving nothing out, into COVID defensives and COVID cyclicals. If you think about traditional defensive assets, and you mentioned this earlier, real estate has been a defensive asset traditionally. It's not something that varies a lot in demand. It's not typical for offices and shopping malls, which have some cyclical sales, but to be completely empty. Well, that's really been a COVID cyclical. As you mentioned, technology has been very defensive in this particular period. But you think about where we will be in the next couple of years with the high likelihood that there will be a post-pandemic period. There's very likely to be an effective vaccine or treatment for this pandemic like all others before. And so we could expect some rebounds in real estate, industrial activity, trade activity, has been very, very much weakened by this COVID shock, and plenty of traditional services. What we want to do in our case, again, and you mentioned earlier about dividends, you know, is limit some of the exposure to the U.S.'s largest technology firms. We're not saying these are bad companies at all, but if your U.S. equity portfolio is more than 50% technology, media, and telecom, you should probably diversify. And one of the things that has been a really enduring source of return and value is companies that grow their dividends routinely. Now, of course, this is not something they can do every year like this one. But when you take a look back at what their returns have been, those companies that have managed to grow their dividends, not just pay them, but grow them, they've outperformed some of the best performing market cap market indices, you know, routinely over a 30-year track record. And that's something that is not affected by market style of the moment, including this particular crisis that we're in.
Yeah, Stephen, so you do have some value names to look out for in the U.S. markets. But just to wrap things up, what's worth noting is we've seen the U.S. markets hit record high week after week. Is that still so-called value in the U.S. markets when you look at how cheap elsewhere it is in the likes of Singapore, where we are pushing five-week lows? Where should you be looking at right now geographically?
Yes, well, look, our point of view on the U.S. market, and again, this belongs in every global investor's portfolio. We're not telling anyone to limit their U.S. equity exposure to a minimal level, but we've put an increasing share of our overweight in equities in non-U.S. markets. Asia is a very, very attractive region for long-term economic growth. But even Latin America, in terms of being a boom and bust cyclical market, Europe, with very similar unloved characteristics by investors, with the U.S. at a record high, 57% share of the entire world equity market, you know, this is clearly a lower long-term return prospect when it's so much. So we are certainly investing in more global markets and find Asia particularly attractive for long-term investors. Now, the key for investors in Singapore and elsewhere in Asia is also don't avoid being able to look outside your own country, and you certainly need diversification from local country risks in any portfolio.
All right, I've been chatting with Stephen Whiting. He is the Chief Investment Strategist and Chief Economist at Citi Private Bank, helping us to tell the story why is no longer your parents' value. Stephen, thank you so much for your time this morning.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg. Or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.